Hi, I'm John Mooney and welcome to The Dark State. Just a short note to say that if you are hearing this, you will only hear a section of today's conversation. We don't run ads on the podcast and rely solely on the support of our subscribers. If you are interested in the security threats facing Ireland and the modern world, and you like what we do, please consider subscribing. In order to access the full episode, you will need to subscribe on Patreon or Apple Podcasts. Regardless of whether you subscribe or not, I do hope you enjoy this show. Many people believe that violent dissident Republican organisations are a spent force. The new IRA and the Continuity IRA rarely mount attacks in Northern Ireland. Indeed, it could be argued that they are fading away. But others like myself think otherwise. To discuss this issue, I am joined by Dr. Aaron Edwards from the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst. I'm John Mooney and welcome to The Dark State. Aaron, welcome back to the show. We are going to look under the bonnet of violent dissident republicanism. Could I begin by asking you to give me your appraisal of this violent movement? Where is it now?
I think it's useful to consider the broader security context and how that's changed in the past couple of years. So recent statistics released by the PSNI tell us that in the year from September 21 to August 22, there has been a drop in paramilitary activity. There have been less attacks, more arrests. There have been more people charged with terrorist-related activity. Bombing incidents, for example, have been at an all-time low in the past decade, at least. Loyalists are carrying out more shootings and assaults in their own communities. The number of attacks related to republicanism, militant republicanism, seems to have dropped. Yet we have still reasonably high numbers of shooting incidents occurring in Derry and Belfast. Having said that, the police seem to be finding more rounds of ammunition and the odd firearm and explosives. So it's an encouraging sign from the PSNI when you look at the statistics. Digging down deeper into that, I think it's really for those dissident Republican groups, it's probably a setback. But as we both know, they will bounce back. It's just a matter of when and how.
I tend to agree with you on that, and I would concur with that analysis. So just to explain to those who really are unfamiliar with this movement, all of these groups emerged from the ranks of the Provisional IRA, and indeed some of them date back to 1986. So ultra groups like this, they're a common feature in peace processes where militant groups develop in response to perceived compromises by their parent organisation. So I'm going to take everyone through a potted history of this movement. They go back to 1986, where the Provisional IRA split into the Provisionals and that the Continuity IRA and Republican Sinn Féin emerged from that. And that was over an ideological schism within the Provisional IRA and Sinn Féin over its policy to abandon abstentionism. That's where they decided to recognise the Irish government and Dáil Éireann. So that led to the formation of the Continuity IRA, which really only began its terrorist campaign around 1995-96. Of far more significance was a split that took place in October 97 amongst the Provisionals, where we saw the emergence of the real IRA. And that was far more serious because that group had the capabilities of carrying out a lot of bomb attacks. Everyone would know that it was responsible for the Omagh bombing, which killed 29 people and two unborn twins. But the real IRA itself then split into the real IRA and a smaller group called Oglaí na hÉireann. And that organisation still exists to this day. Very curiously, around 2010, 2011, a number of groups came together to form what became known as the New IRA, and this is still the biggest organisation now that is operating on the island of Ireland. So that's a unified group of dissident Republicans that are very much active. And although they overshadowed the Continuity IRA, they have shown them the Continuity IRA is still there, although it only has pockets of support. So you're looking at a very mixed bag of groups, a lot of different personalities, a lot of different ideologies floating amongst them. And then, Aaron, I'm sure you'll agree with this, there are also mainstream Republican groups like the INLA. These are groups that officially support the peace process, but are continuing to engage in paramilitarism. So it's a very mixed bag, very diverse movement with lots of different competing interests. Is that a correct synopsis, Aaron?
Yes, and I think I would add, historically speaking, there have always been these sort of constellation of Republican groups, armed or otherwise. And, you know, for those who study militancy in Ireland and the way in which those groups sort of find a voice and find a purpose, find a cause, they are competing within a very small space. And in fact, you know, in the 1950s, when the IRA decided to launch its Operation Harvest, if you read, for example, the memoir of one of those who has been as a sort of self-avowed member of the IRA, he describes spending a lot of his time in the intelligence section spying on other dissident groups. So, you know, Mick Ryan's experiences are very instructive there, as are others, such as Sean McStephen in his memoir, and really explaining where there has been a disagreement, you know, even within that movement, the IRA in the 1960s. We know that they eventually split for several reasons, but you know, there was always a disagreement within the group about the best way to push forward, you know, their ultimate objective of obtaining a united Ireland, even if they were engaging in a very limited way. So I think, you know, from a historical perspective, these groups have always been divided over, you know, aims, objectives, ends, ways and means, as strategists would put it. And I think that the most important aspect of this, I suppose, going forward is the battle over legitimacy and how some of those members of, say, the Provisional IRA are at pains to, you know, criticise what they call micro groups, those so-called dissident groups, militant groups that continue in some way, shape and form to carry on that mantle of resistance against British rule in Ireland. Just on the Provisionals and on Sinn Féin, I mean, Gerry Adams some time ago said I think it was an article, that the dissidents have no popular base of support within republicanism. You have a mixture of adventurers, old-style physical forcers, barstool revolutionaries, and interestingly enough, some people who are definitely agents of the British Crown. And I think that's a fairly good kind of way to represent those members within the organisations. Even today, we know from, and I'm sure we'll get on to this, some of the major operations that have been launched by security services and police in Northern Ireland and beyond, where, you know, there have most definitely been agents of the British Crown involved in, you know, steering those groups towards, you know, defeat in a strategic sense. So even though, yes, there have been splits, there have been disagreements within the groups, I think that they continue. Always someone will emerge to try and carry on the torch.
So I'm really interested in the New IRA because that is somewhat different, because it's an amalgamation of groups. And that was the first time that ever happened in the history of modern violent republicanism, where people came together. Were you surprised at that? And what are your thoughts about how that particular project has you know, unfolded, it seems to have become a cohesive organization. It hasn't been successful in terms of a terrorist campaign, but in many ways, I would argue that its sole purpose is to preserve an underground IRA structure. And indeed, when I've interviewed its leadership, they've been quite clear about that, and they've been very open about, you know, that they don't believe they can defeat Britain. They don't believe they can, you know, drive Britain from Northern Ireland. But they say that they are solely concerned with preserving an IRA organization for future generations. And then, you know, it's arguable whether they've managed to do that, or whether it's more reflective of a sort of admission that this type of terrorism is going nowhere. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, much of the criticism of that kind of jingoistic talk has come from, you know, independent Republicans, former members of the Provisional IRA, like Tommy McKernney and Anthony McIntyre, you know, who have really kind of railed against that notion that you should just continue it, even if it is devoid. And I'm using a sort of strategist's playbook here and understanding it rather than, you know, the independent Republican perspective. But if it's devoid of purpose, if it's no, you know, fundamental strategic sense, then why continue it? It's basically, for all good strategists, we would say that it's devoid of purpose, and therefore it's criminality rather than political kind of violence. And so I think that they really have to go big or go home, these groups. And just on that, I think a lot of megalomania drives these groups. I mean, I obviously look at militant groups around the world, and motivations are very, very interesting. When you kind of peel back the different layers of the onion, you will find that people are engaged in this militancy for different reasons. I mean, if we were to look at the so-called new IRA in Derry, for example, which is proving to be one of the most stubborn squads within the, you know, that group, and most dangerous. They, you know, they're centered around individuals, you know, big egos and big sort of recognizable personalities in local estates. And I don't think that's any different, really, if we're looking at kind of Lurgan or anywhere else. You will find these individuals who have coveted a notoriety, a renown, as Professor Louise Richardson would call it. You know, there is a renown, a celebrity status attached to becoming involved in that kind of activity. You know, it's conspiratorial, it's kind of hushed, it's, as you've said, it's underground, it's continuing to carry the torch without necessarily bearing that torch in public so that the authorities can kind of can see it, but nevertheless carrying it on in everyday discourse. Some people who know dissident Republicans very well would say that they are little more than gangs, and understanding them in an Irish context, of course, compared to, say, gang warfare or gang activity in the United States or somewhere else, or Latin America, or wherever it might be. Obviously, they're different geographical locations, but kind of some of the motivations, some of the variables are the same. And I believe that is the case. I mean, if you look at the repeated attempts by the authorities to neutralize these groups by decapitation, by arrest and imprisonment of their leaders, it has led to a kind of falling away of activity for at least a short while, until new people emerge to carry forward that mantle. And I do believe that it's kind of regenerative in that sense, that if you do remove some of these key personalities, others will fill their space, because ideologically speaking, they are quite driven. And it's ever been thus, you know, historically, that is it indeed what happens. So that's why it's a stubborn problem. It's difficult to try and manage that problem out of existence in a security sense.
So I meet these people fairly regularly, and I've got to know some of them quite well. And I always kind of regard this particular movement as being very transformative at the moment. I think they've become a subculture within our society, because they exist, they, you know, go about their business every day. I look at them as both a Southern and a Northern Irish issue, because there's an awful lot of people involved in this in the Republic. And that's something that's often overlooked. I think it's really important to remember and to acknowledge that only a tiny percentage of their activity is of a terrorist nature. Most of their activity involves collecting information, gathering money, organizing themselves. Sometimes it's simply resolving disputes within their communities. And there's this aspect to it that it's very, very hard to articulate what it is or to describe, where a lot of people who are involved in this simply like to be part of an underground movement, and this is what works for them. And that's why I continually go back to the notion of them being a subculture, and that ties into some of what you're saying about sort of gangs and hierarchy, etc., etc. Like, I've met a lot of people involved in this who have no real involvement in crime or anything like that, but they maybe hold weapons for the IRA. They don't discuss other dissident groups by, you know, calling them the Continuity IRA or what other name one of these groups is using. Instead, they just refer to it as the IRA. And these people, some of them lead normal lives. They, you know, they're in jobs, etc. But they go about their business, their daily lives, unimpeded, and then they dedicate, I suppose, some of their time to the organization of the IRA. And I always, you know, I often ask these people, why are you involved in this? Very few of them will say now that they believe they can drive Britain from Northern Ireland, or, you know, essentially openly admit that there is really no purpose in the violence that they carry out or organize or attempt to organize, but that they feel it's important that the IRA should exist in some form or other. And one of their leaders a while ago, I met this guy, and I kind of said to him, you know, if there was a 32 county sovereign republic in the morning, you would still be involved in this. And the guy turned around to me and said, you got it in one. And that's why I'm really curious about this group at the moment in this movement, what it is and what it's becoming. And I think you're correct in many ways. When I think about them, I think about sort of a secret society that is preserving itself, and it's kind of, you know, it's able to regenerate when people least expect it, and has this continuous group of people pledging allegiance to it. And some of them drift off, but many others don't. So that's the way I kind of see them these days. I'm very wary of people who say that they're not, because they're not involved in bomb attacks or shootings, that they're suddenly going away, or they're disappearing from society. I don't go with that at all. I'm just interested in your thoughts on what I've just said, like in terms of them being a subculture. I would say the same thing of loyalist paramilitaries as well.
Yes, I've spoken about this before with you, John, that unfortunately, you know, paramilitarism adds kind of muscle to this. And in a way, it's sort of muscle memory. You know, it's inculcated from birth and beyond. You know, if I can just sort of digress into a slight anecdote, I remember in 2007 through to 2008, I coordinated a project for the University of Ulster, but I worked hand in glove with a couple of community-based organizations in Belfast and Derry. And I was working very closely with people on the interfaces. I visited the interfaces several times. I actually moved up into Derry from Belfast for that year. And I remember walking to work one morning when an ambulance screamed past me. It was to go and save the life of a constable who had been shot by dissident Republicans while dropping his daughter off at school. And I can't remember the exact, you know, nature of the incident, but I do remember speaking to those connected to Provisional IRA, and so Sinn Féin later on, and they were balking at this because it had been a failed attack, and they used that as an example of why dissident republicanism was a failed sort of model, continuing the struggle when, of course, peace had come to Ireland. But I think that one thing that they didn't really factor in was actually the sort of some of the motivations, some of the sparks and the triggers for that, for those people to take up the mantle again. And I was in the same people I had the conversation with. I'd been in a room with them at sort of, you know, when you sometimes find yourself in a situation you don't understand until later on. It was one of those moments I was in.
You have been listening to Dr. Aaron Edwards. I would like to thank him for his contribution. And don't forget, if you wish to contact me, please email thedarkstatepodcast@protonmail.com, or you can message me on Signal, Telegram, or WhatsApp on +353 89 975 3779. Until next time, take care.